Hello, and welcome to Adventures in Anthropology. My name is Jennifer Pawson, and from Wellesley College, I bring you the fourth and five installments on the culture of secrecy. This podcast will be focusing on national secrecy, particularly as it relates to espionage. Early records of secrecy and espionage can be found in many places, but one of the most substantial proofs that secrecy was long considered an important part of warfare is by examining Sun Tzu's The Art of War. Believed to be the continuously relevant source of information on warfare and human psychology, The Art of War outlines how secrecy was influential in winning or outwitting enemies. Quote, "What enables an intelligent government to overcome others and achieve extraordinary accomplishments is foreknowledge. Foreknowledge cannot be gotten by ghosts and spirits, cannot be had by analogy, cannot be found out by calculation. It must be attained from people who know." End quote. This foreknowledge primarily comes from people that know what the enemy is doing. In this section of The Art of War, Sun Tzu places a great deal of importance on the ability to use spies effectively. Treat spies with justice, and to use the enemy's spies against them. It is important to note that this call for espionage and secrecy still rings true even in the digital age. One might wonder if espionage is not important considering the ability to, quote, hack into enemies' computers, end quote, and to take information from covert surveillance. However, I would argue this digital retrieval of information also involves spying. Perhaps spies today are not those that have a physical presence in enemy camps, but those people, those, quote, digital, end quote, spies, who use media and other sources of information to gain this foreknowledge Sun Tzu regards so highly. In addition, Sun Tzu also remarks, quote, "No one in the armed services is appreciated as much as secret agents. No awards are richer than those given to secret agents. And no business is more secret than espionage," end quote. In this sentence, Sun Tzu touches upon three themes that have been central to my study. First, that secrecy has existed for a long time, perhaps ever since there has been interactions between people, but at least since the beginning of warfare. Second, secrecy is considered an essential part of interactions between people. And in certain situations, secrecy is even appreciated. Third, that although personal secrecy is hard to study, it is harder still to investigate espionage. Thus, secrecy is a necessarily opaque facet of culture and humanity. We do note that this reference to secrecy with Sun Tzu gives us a better timeline for the appearance of secrecy within culture, and also lends credence to the notion that secrecy is not singular to a specific type of people. However, we will now continue our examination of American secrecy and the history of the United States in espionage. One might remember that as children, the story of George Washington not willing to tell a lie to his father about the cherry tree helped cement the idea that honesty was something to aspire towards. However, it is ironic that many historians consider Washington to have been one of the first members of America's intelligence community, and that, in fact, he was very good at keeping secrets. In Christopher Andrews' book, For the President's Eyes Only, we see that not only was Washington good at keeping secrets, but due to his espionage and intelligence network, the colonies probably won the Revolution despite overwhelming odds. Washington once said, quote, "There is nothing more necessary than good intelligence to frustrate a designing enemy, and nothing that requires greater plans to obtain," end quote. Later, Andrew remarks, quote, "Because all members of Washington's espionage networks were sworn to secrecy, most of their identities were not revealed until long after the Revolutionary War. Some are still unknown," end quote. Washington insisted upon secrecy in the highest degree, claiming that operations that were kept secret were successful, and if the enemy knew even a hint about the operation, then it could fail most miserably. In later examinations of the culture of espionage in America, one sees that the Cold War is a frequent theme. During the Cold War, espionage became more and more prevalent as the American government attempted to learn about the USSR's plans and actions before the Soviet Union learned about the Americans' work. As the spy network in both countries grew, government actions became more secretive. But another interesting development occurred. Frequently, spies became double agents, or triple agents, meaning that they would work for one country, tell the other country that they would be a double agent, and go back and report their double agent activities to the first country. In one case, a British spy learned of a phone wire that was being built underneath the Berlin Wall by the Soviets. The British agent then told the British High Command about the phone wire, and the British and Americans promptly rushed to, quote, tap, end quote, this phone line. They built tunnels near the west side of the Berlin Wall and then tapped the phone line so that they would be able to monitor secret Soviet communications. Several decades later, and after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, the Americans learned that the Soviets had actually known their communications were being monitored, but kept using the phone line so that neither the British nor the Americans would be aware that the British agent had been, in fact, a Soviet spy. In this way, the Soviets used secrecy against the Americans. By pretending to be ignorant of the phone line monitoring, the Soviets were probably able to learn more about the Americans than the Americans learned about Soviet intelligence. In another instance, the Soviet Union used a common ploy that played on American naivete. In the 1980s, the U.S. liaison to the Soviet Union, who was living in Moscow, decided to help increase public relations by meeting with a group of Soviet schoolchildren. At the end of the meeting, the schoolchildren presented the liaison with a very nice wooden American seal, complete with eagle and all. Pleased with the generosity, the U.S. liaison placed the seal behind his desk. 15 years later, when the American government was doing a routine electronic bug sweep, they found a microphone and transmitter hidden inside the seal. Unfortunately for the U.S. liaison, it was discovered that the Soviet government had been monitoring all of the communications in his office for the past 15 years. Once again, secrecy and espionage had allowed people access to information that was highly classified and protected. But once the protection was compromised, so too was the information. The International Spy Museum has many more examples of these types of stories, but does not have any recent examples of American espionage. The last source of information comes from the World War II era, or is related to double agents who have been caught operating in the United States. This oversight of recent American espionage history is not unintentional. Considering the breadth of information available to visitors about pre-World War II American and foreign espionage, it is very likely that in order to protect the secrecy of the current American intelligence community, the International Spy Museum was unable to locate artifacts from recent years. Clearly, though, secrecy continues to be prevalent about espionage, and that secrecy is most telling about what American governments finds valuable, the ability to surprise the other. Another interesting aspect was that the museum quickly noted that espionage, like Sun Tzu stated, is one of the most difficult businesses in the world. It requires that your cover, your background, and reason for being somewhere is not compromised. It also requires that surveillance techniques do not monitor any illegal activity and that your activities do not arouse suspicion. In the introduction to the Spy Museum, visitors hear about the world of espionage and learn, quote, should you have access to the right people, the right information, you could find yourself in the position to change the course of history. But wait one moment. You should understand what is at risk. The consequences could change your life. Discovery, deportation, detainment, and maybe death. But perhaps the most difficult aspect of spying is the day-to-day deceit. One of the things you learn early is that you don't trust much, And so you learn that you have to be suspicious. Trust no one. Look very closely at what you're seeing, because it's not necessarily what you think it is. So do you think you could be a spy? Outside, you'll assume your cover and learn the craft of espionage. Just yourself. Your trip will be through a different history of civilization, a secret history of history. Be cautious. You're not the only one. There are other spies among you. If they're good, you'll know not who they are. End quote. As one can see, espionage is completely based in secrecy. It requires the highest levels of secrecy, and the best spies are those who keep secrets, truly secret. No one knows that these spies know something they're not supposed to know. Once again, we see the connection this has with personal secrecy. As the video introduction at the International Spy Museum states, quote, "The most difficult aspect of spying is the day-to-day deceit," end quote. This is the pinnacle of personal secrecy. And so we see now that there is more than a resemblance between personal, group, and national secrecy. They are intertwined with one another, making it nearly impossible to determine how one affects the other. But with more studies like this one, we might finally understand the true nature of secrecy and its effect on culture. For this podcast, I traveled to the International Spy Museum. The International Spy Museum is one of the largest collections of espionage artifacts and espionage history. The only public museum in the world dedicated to preserving the history of espionage, the International Spy Museum contains, quote, "film, interactive, and state-of-the-art exhibits," end quote, designed to help the public better understand the impact of spies and the art of espionage. From the frequently asked questions on the website, quote, "In the words of the museum's founder and chairman, Milton Maltz, the International Spy Museum is more than history, more than information or entertainment. Its mission is to reflect the significance of intelligence as a critical component of national security," end quote. This museum was an excellent addition to my fieldwork on the subject of secrecy, since its mission is to help the public understand the importance of espionage. However, my personal podcasts are not the views of the museum staff or company and should be taken solely as part of my overall field work. I would like to thank all of you for listening, and also I would like to thank my parents who funded this trip and made this study possible. If you would like to learn more about my sources for this podcast, please click on the link below or go to the International Spy Museum's website, http://www.spymuseum.org. This has been Jennifer Pawson with Adventures of Anthropology, Cultures of Secrecy. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Tschüss.